Have you ever just given up? You stopped trying because you know it was just no use. Nothing you did was going to change anything, so you gave up hope. There's a man named Martin Seligman. He was a grad student at the University of Pennsylvania, and he came across this phenomenon, interesting phenomenon, known as learned helplessness. And what he came at, he figured this out from an experiment. He did this experiment with dogs where these dogs were given a mild electrical shock, a slight electrical shock. The shock came at random, so the dogs didn't know when it was going to happen. And no matter what they did, they couldn't stop it, no matter what. Now, I know what you're thinking, and I agree with you. That's cruel. They should never have ever done that to dogs. Should have used cats. Anyway, so in this next experiment, they took the same dogs and made it to where they could escape the shocks. What they did is they created this small container with a low barrier, and whenever it would start the shocks again, the dogs could just step over this barrier to where it'd be safe, and they would get away from the shocks. A normal dog would do that, but a normal dog would jump around and keep moving around until they found relief. But these dogs, after being conditioned to know there was nothing they could do, these dogs just assumed there still was nothing they can do, and so they didn't even try, even though relief was just a few feet away. I think we can all relate a little bit to that sense of helplessness, that learned helplessness over the past few months, and some of us more than others. And some of you may have been experiencing that sense of helplessness before this crisis even began. You know, I've noticed as folks slide into a sense of helplessness and hopelessness, they often will try anything and everything but Jesus. You'll call your financial advisor, read article after article on the internet. You'll even consult a horoscope. You know, as author and conference speaker Melanie Schenkel, who's been here before, as she says, at the corner of crazy and desperate, you'll always find lowered standards. Well, maybe you've tried everything and you've come to church now, and maybe this is your lowest standard. I am aware that every week people walk through the doors of this church and they have come to the end of themselves, and they are coming into the emergency room. That may be you. You've tried everything else. The doctor, your mother-in-law, your back fence neighbor, your best friend, the school counselor, Oprah, Google, nothing. Nothing, and no one has helped. So you find yourself here at church. Here you are. And you've come to the emergency room. You're looking for help and hope. Maybe someone suggested you come here, or maybe you just came up with the idea on your own. Well, if that is you, if that describes you, let me tell you two things. First of all, if you came here or if you're listening online, you came to the right place. We can help. The second thing is, we may not address your exact concern or your specific need, but we have something better. And that something is hope. We have lots of hope here. That's what we have. And so what I want to encourage you to do is, if you find yourself at the corner of crazy and desperate, don't give up hope. Don't ever give up hope. There's always hope. I want to show you where we can find it. If you have your Bible, I'd invite you to open it and turn to Luke chapter 8, verse 42. Now, the book of Luke is in what we call the New Testament of the Bible. The Old Testament takes up three-fourths of the Bible. So you'll flip all three-fourths of the way through your Bible, and you'll get to like the first collection of books in the New Testament. We call the Gospels. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, each of those are four biographies written by the person whom they're named after. And when you get there, find Luke chapter 8 and go to verse 42 and just wait for me there. Let me give you a little backstory to this narrative we're gonna look at today. Jesus had burst onto the scene of a beaten down country full of beaten down people who had just lost all hope. They had no hope that anything in their life would ever change. They lived in physical poverty and in political oppression. They experienced what we would call a learned helplessness and a learned hopelessness. They didn't think anything was ever going to get better. But then Jesus proved to be somewhat of a game changer. Jesus was healing people's sicknesses. Jesus was answering profound questions with amazing simplicity. And Jesus was uniting people across political divides. Imagine that. So people flocked to Jesus. I mean, people wanted to see him, hear him, touch him. They wanted his help. Among them was a man named Jairus. And Jairus had a 12-year-old daughter who was dying. He heard Jesus heal people, so he came to Jesus and he begged Jesus to help his daughter. Please come to my house and see my daughter. And so Jesus agreed. This is where we pick up the story. Luke 8, verse 42. As Jesus was on his way, the crowds almost crushed him. Don't miss that, okay? Crowds almost crushed him. Have you ever felt like you were going to be crushed in a crowd? Like those scenes we've seen at Walmart on Black Friday before they started putting those specials online. Have you ever been in one of those crowds? I have. It wasn't on Black Friday though. It happened at a concert. I was going to this concert. It was a few hours before the concert. And it was general admission, so you had to come early to get in and get a front row seat. So a few hundred people had gathered around there. So I'm thinking that the Civic Center thought, you know, we've got lots of doors, but it's a small crowd, so we'll just open two doors. And so I had this row of doors across the front. They only opened two, and as soon as they opened them, I mean, the crowd just pushed in. Everyone was trying to get in front of everyone else. And it was crushing. It literally was crushing. The people up near the building just got pressed into all the glass doors that were shut. I mean, it was painful. And, all of a sudden, in all this crush, we hear this loud pop or bang, and one of the doors, one of these huge glass doors to the Civic Center just broke off from the press and people pushing it back further than it was supposed to go. It was January. It was the month of January, and it was cool outside, but it immediately felt hot and steamy and hard to breathe. Kind of like trying to sing with a mask on, you know what I mean? Anyway. So this crowd, this is pressing in there. If you've ever experienced that, you know what it's like. You know what it's like. That's what it was like the day Jairus came and asked Jesus to heal his daughter. That's the kind of crowd Jairus made it through to speak to Jesus. Well, perhaps the despair of this current crisis, or maybe some other crisis that you've been living in has taken your breath away and you find it hard to breathe. If that's true, then you can relate to Jesus. You can relate to Jairus and all the rest of the people in the crowd. And I want you to keep that in mind when you see that phrase, almost crushed him. Look back at verse 42, Luke 8, 42. As Jesus was on his way, he's on his way now to Jairus's home, the crowds almost crushed him. And a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years, but no one could heal her. She came up behind him and touched the edge of his cloak, and immediately her bleeding stopped. "Who touched me?" Jesus asked. When they all denied it, Peter is one of Jesus' close disciples. He was always close to Jesus. When they all denied it, Peter said, "Master, the people are crowding and pressing against you." But Jesus said, "Someone touched me. I know that power has gone out from me." Then the woman, seeing that she could not go unnoticed, came trembling and fell at his feet. Just picture that. In the presence of all the people, she told why she had touched him and how she had been instantly healed. Then he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace." In the chaos of the crushing crowd, she came in hope and she left in peace. That can be your story today. That can be your story if you've come here almost out of hope, but you have just a little more hope. That can be your story. You may not have resolution to your crisis today. You may not be healed of whatever sickness you have or have your question answered, but you can leave here in peace. And that's what you need more than anything else. You need the peace and presence of Jesus Christ. Well, let's back up a little bit. Remember, Jesus was on his way. He was on his way to the home of a man named Jairus to heal his 12-year-old daughter. He stopped in the middle of this urgent mission to help a dying girl, to stop and talk to a woman who had just touched his cloak, a woman whose problem could have probably waited longer. She wasn't in danger of dying like Jairus' daughter was. And I'm sure when this happened, Jairus questioned Jesus' timing. It's like, "Jesus, my daughter is desperate. I'm desperate. Why are you stopping to talk to this woman?" Have you ever questioned God's timing? I sure have. And I think perhaps all of us may have during this crisis. I think back to when this first started. You know, we had more momentum going into this summer with our student high school camps than ever before. We were about to fill up a fourth bus because we almost filled up all of our reservations for Big Stuff Camp back in January. We were about to load up a fourth bus of students to go. And the reason that's so important is God always does things at Big Stuff. in our high school camp, we always see lots of students taking big steps forward towards God. Many step over the line of faith and begin a forever relationship with Jesus Christ. It is that effective, that great of a camp for people. The camp got canceled. We had more short-term mission trips scheduled around the world, multiple trips to multiple countries than ever before. But we only got to have a few of those. Only a few groups got to go before all the trips were canceled. And I had been working for months leading up to the end of March to take a group of pastors from Texas up to Seattle to meet a group of church planters who desperately need their church's financial and spiritual support. We had to cancel that trip too, and I don't know when we'll be able to reschedule it. I mean, for me, the timing could not have been worse. So many things are going so well this year. If you think the timing's bad, just ask a high school senior, high school graduate. Have you ever questioned God's timing? I think all of us probably have at some point. Well, we've all lost something these past few months. And for some of you, the loss is greater than others. You may think, senior year, nothing, I lost my job. We've all lost something. But I assure you that God is aware of every one of those losses. God is not up in heaven, wringing his hands, going, oh my, this coronavirus crisis has gotten out of hand. No, I promise you, he is not. Here's something we need to understand. And if you're taking notes, write this down. Trusting God means accepting his timing. It means accepting his timing. Now, we really have little choice in this, you know. I think one thing we've learned is we don't have as much control as we thought we did. But one of the marks, one of the signs of a growing faith is learning to trust God's timing. Because his ways are different than ours. As a matter of fact, the prophet Isaiah tells us this in Isaiah 55. He says, as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways, God's ways, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. God's in control. He's got this. He knows what's going on. Jesus was on his way to help a little girl whose situation was desperate, and he stopped to talk to a lady who touched his cloak. Can you imagine the thoughts of everyone in that crowd? That little girl's need was urgent, but consider this. If you pay attention to all the details of the story, this woman had been sick for 12 years. That's as long as that little girl had even been alive. And this woman who'd been sick for 12 years, remember, it was a crushing crowd that Jairus was able to get through to meet Jesus. But this woman was also able to get through this crowd. She'd been chronically ill for 12 years, and yet she pushed through that crowd to see Jesus. So who was more desperate? Whose problem was more worthy of Jesus' timing? The little girl who was dying or the woman who'd been dying every day for 12 years? Look back at her story. Look at verse 43. A woman was there who'd been subject to bleeding for 12 years, but no one could heal her. She came up behind him, behind Jesus, and touched the edge of his cloak, and immediately her bleeding stopped. Now, the truth is, only half of us here could even begin to imagine what it would be like for their cycle to go on and on for 12 years without stopping. She must have been miserable and weak. How did she ever get through that crushing crowd? Well, what kind of illness or problem or crisis have you been going through that seems like it's never ending? If you're in one right now, then maybe you can understand a little bit about how this woman must have felt. Now, Luke, the one whose biography of Jesus we're reading right here, as he tells this story, all he says about her past before coming to Jesus was no one could heal her. Well, there's another biography about Jesus. There's actually four, but in another biography that we call the book of Mark, we see a few more details about this story. Mark says she suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had. Yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. She's completely out of money at this point. She's been sick for 12 years. Now she's broke. And what's more, this is something you wouldn't think about, but according to Jewish law, she wasn't even supposed to be. She wasn't even legally allowed to be in that crowd because her illness made her ceremonially unclean. Now, that seems like a concept that would be hard for us to grasp. What does it mean to be ceremonially unclean and not welcome in a crowd? Well, I think you'll get the same feeling if you cough or sneeze in the grocery store this week, okay? She had 3 strikes against her. She was sick, very sick, broke and unwelcome. She was living at the corner of crazy and desperate and was almost without hope, but she came to Jesus. She came up behind him. Somehow she got close enough to touch him. She touched the edge of his cloak, and immediately, the moment she touched his cloak, her bleeding stopped, and she knew she was healed. Now, we'll never know if she was trying to get up there so she could grab his cloak and pull him toward her and beg him to heal her like Jairus had begged Jesus to go and take care of his 12-year-old daughter, or if she knew, if somehow she just knew that she just needed to touch him, just a slight touch of his robe. We do know this, one touch was all it took, and she was healed. She was healed the moment she touched him, but what she hadn't counted on was what happened next. As soon as she touched him and immediately knew she was healed, Jesus said, "Who touched me? Who touched me?" And everyone stopped. It's crazy. I mean, it's hard to stop a crowd, a crushing crowd like this, but everyone did when he said, "Who touched me?" And everyone denied it. And no one was willing to say that they were the ones who touched him. And one of his disciples said, "Jesus, everybody's touching you." But Jesus insisted. He said, "Someone touched me. I know that power has gone out from me." Can you imagine her embarrassment? I mean, that's just not something you want to talk about in a crowd. I remember several years ago, I went to visit a guy from our church who was in the hospital. And I didn't know why he was in there. I just heard he was there. So I went to go see him. He was a friend, and he looked healthy, you know, and I thought, well, he'll tell me why he's here. I mean, surely it'll come up in conversation. We chit-chatted for a while, and he didn't say anything. Finally, my curiosity got the best of me. I said, "So, dude, why are you here?" Only so I could pray for him, of course, not out of it. Well, he stammered around, and he finally looked at me, kind of embarrassed, and he said, "I have a big boil on my backside," except he didn't say backside. I realized I shouldn't ask those kinds of questions. Why are you here? Well, you know, it's bad enough feeling awful, and I know he wasn't feeling very good. It's bad enough feeling awful and then not being able to talk about it. This woman's problem was so much worse than my friend's. The last thing she wanted to do was tell a whole crowd of people what had been going on with her in her life. "Who touched me?" Jesus said. "Someone touched me." And at that moment, I imagine the crowd just backed off. And this woman was left standing there and just terrified. It says she was terrified and she fell at his feet, feeling all alone in front of Jesus, wondering, "What is going to happen to me now?" I can imagine the things that were going through her mind. What if someone recognizes me and knows my problem and says, "Wait, what are you doing here, woman? You shouldn't be out in this crowd. You know it's not legal for you to be here. Someone else could get sick from you being here." Or what if she had overheard the conversation with Jairus and knew what Jesus was doing? What if Jesus scolded her for stopping him, for trying to grab his cloak while he was going to do something important and heal a girl who was about to die? Embarrassed, she fell at Jesus' feet. And you could have probably heard a pin drop in that crowd as she told Jesus, and everyone else heard it, her story. When she finished telling her story, Jesus simply said, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace." No shame, no questioning, just compassion. Her story creates a beautiful picture of what that kind of faith looks like, the kind of faith that is needed to help us move away from the corner of crazy and desperate toward peace. Listen, remember this, write it down, and don't forget it. It is not about the amount of your faith. It's not about the strength of your faith. There's a whole tribe in Christianity that is very self-centered, and it's all talking about making everything great for me, as if Jesus only came to be our genie in a bottle and help us, make us healthy, wealthy, and wise, and never sick. And they say, you just need to have enough faith. If you had enough faith, if your faith was strong enough, you could do anything, have any of this stuff. That's not what the Bible talks about. It is not about the amount of your faith, how strong your faith is. It is all about where you place your faith. As Tim Keller, a pastor in New York, put it, I love the way he said it. He said, strong faith Stay with me. Strong faith in a weak branch is fatally inferior to weak faith in a strong branch. It's not about your faith. It's not about you. It's about Jesus. It's about who and where you put your faith. She put her faith. She had faith. She put her faith and her money in lots of people who not only couldn't help her, they hurt her. Now, I'm sure some meant well, but some obviously took advantage of her. Now, I believe in modern medicine. I believe it's a miracle. I believe it's God's gift to us. I am a living example of its power. But I also realize I can't depend only on medicine. And I think we realize that now, that there are things that we just can't, that medicine can't even help, can't even always touch. Our faith has to be in someone, in something far greater than anything we can create or we can wrap our hands around. Ultimately, our faith has to be in Jesus. My faith has to be in Jesus. Your faith has to be in Jesus. So put your faith in Jesus. When you get to the corner of crazy and desperate, that's the only place you can go. Maybe you've been living there. Maybe you came here looking for hope, hoping that Jesus could help you because you've tried everything else. You're going to give him one last chance. And like I said, you came to the right place, but that's because we can point you to where that hope is, to where that help is. Put your faith in Jesus, and he will gently lead you away from the corner of crazy and desperate into a place of peace. I know, because I spent some time last year at the corner of crazy and desperate. I know that fear of wondering if I'm going to be alive this time next year. I know that anxiety of like, what's going to happen next? I can't catch a break. Jesus met me at the corner of crazy and desperate. And he gave me the peace I desperately needed. And folks, he can give you that peace as well. If you're a follower of Jesus Christ, let me just remind you to turn back to him and trust his touch and trust his timing. He's got this. You can count on it. If you're not yet a Christ follower, but you came here, and maybe you are scraping bottom, but you came here or you're listening online, let me just encourage you, what you need more than anything else is a relationship with Jesus Christ. You need to put your faith in him, and you need to start that relationship. So what I would encourage you to do, if you're at the corner of crazy and desperate, and you've not stepped over the line of faith to follow Jesus, do this. Say a prayer from your heart to Jesus. Tell him you believe he is God. He's God's son. Tell him you believe the stories that he came to earth to die a sacrificial death on a cross to pay the penalty for your sin, that you know that's your greatest need to be forgiven. That's where it all begins. Ask him to forgive your sins. Ask him to come in and take control of your life and ask him to lead you away from that desperation, that helplessness, and give you hope and peace. As a matter of fact, I'd like to lead you in a prayer, whether you're in this room or whether you're online right now. So if you would all bow your heads and pray with me, let me just lead you in that prayer. Just say, Jesus, I believe you are God's son. And yes, I believe you came to earth to be a sacrifice for my sin. I believe you died on a cross to pay the penalty for my sin and came back to life to give me power and peace. Please forgive my sin. Come into my life. Take control. I give you my all. Please replace my helplessness, my hopelessness with your peace. Amen. If you just pray that prayer with me, I want to encourage you. That's the first step in a journey, a good journey. We want to help you on that journey. So if you just pray that prayer with me, whether you're in here or online, would you take out your phone and text the word faith to 95577. Faith. Text that word faith to 95577. And one of our ministers will call you and talk with you and talk to you about taking your next steps with God. We want to help you. We want to help you grow. And we want to help you move you into that hope and that life that Jesus offers us. Don't delay. Do that now.